How has this time as the coach of Jackson State really challenged you as a man?
It challenged me to be patient because I have no patience in anything I do. Everybody knows that because I work my butt off and I work my butt off and I want what I want. But being patient, understanding that, hey, man, you got to develop the kids that are here. Hey, man, you got to allow them to understand how important education is because 99% of these kids aren't going pro.
That was Primetime, Deion Sanders, on why the NFL Hall of Famer became the head football coach at Jackson State this year. Hiring Coach Prime to rebuild an HBCU triggered both hope and skepticism. So hear how a relentless showman actually handled his debut season as a college coach. Then, we turn our attention to Minneapolis, where a verdict arrived for the man who killed George Floyd. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, April 21st. This is ESPN Daily. Jean-Jacques Taylor, where are you at right now, man?
I'm in my lovely home office in DeSoto, Texas, 15 miles south of downtown Dallas, enjoying a beautiful Chamber of Commerce Day.
Jean-Jacques Taylor heads the JJT Media Group, hosts the Jam Session podcast, and covered Deion Sanders' first season at Jackson State for the Undefeated.
Which means the top will be down in about an hour.
Wait a minute. When you take the top down, paint me that picture. What's that like?
Dude, see, I figured this out about convertibles in Dallas way back when in 2007. I went and bought me a midlife crisis car. And I found out that it ain't for the summertime because it's too hot. It's for April, May, June, September, October, November. And so on a day like today, man, I'm finna go hit the back roads, let it out a little bit. I'll enjoy some tunes and become one with nature and myself.
I am deeply jealous of all the things you just described. I'll be honest with you. But it's also very strange, Jean-Jacques, because your convertible riding through springtime in Dallas is also navigating through a college football season. Like, how weird is it? How strange is it for you to have college football games at this time of year?
Very bizarre, I must admit.
So something I'm not used to, and maybe you're already numb to all of this, Jean-Jacques, is Deion Sanders as a coach in college football. And that's why I'm bringing you here today. Jackson State, a historically black university in Jackson, Mississippi, they announced in September of last year that their new head coach is none other than a person that you have covered when he was a player with the Cowboys, right? Hall of Fame cornerback Deion Sanders. You go back with Deion, don't you?
You know, one of the things that I like to say allowed me to become, you know, a really good beat writer and then evolve into a columnist is one of my strengths is understanding what makes people tick. Mm. And so the point of that is, I guess Deion, I can never figure out the year. It was either 96 or 97. He was leading the league in punt returns. And at that point, he was still gracing us only after games. And maybe once every 4 or 5 weeks, he'd come in the locker room and talk. And so I walked up to him one day, one of the rare times he's in the locker room, actually. And I was like, yo, I know you don't like to talk a whole lot, but you're leading the league in punt returns. I figured you might want to throw some shine on the guys blocking for you. And his eyes kind of lit up. And he's like, okay, what you got? And so we sat in the corner, and I literally went through all the guys on the punt return team. He gave me some good stuff. And a couple of days later, after the story ran, I saw him somewhere, probably in the locker room, handed him a copy of it, turned around, and abruptly left. Mm. And a couple of days after that, or whenever the next time he saw me, he was like, hey, that was a good piece you wrote. Anytime you need something, come holler at me. And it kind of started from there, man. And it evolved into a pretty good relationship. The point of it is, I feel like I have a better understanding of who Deion is and what he's all about than just about anybody else in America. Mm. And the one thing I can never convince people of, and I really kind of stopped trying, is that Deion Sanders and Primetime are two completely different people.
I created what you know as Primetime. Oh, baby, you love him, you hate him, but guess what? You had to see him play.
With his name up in lights, Prime.
I don't know Deion Sanders at all as a person. I just know him as the kid growing up in the 90s that I am, who always assumed that primetime, that Neon Deion, was simply all the same guy.
Look at how he is in football, and then compare that to how he was in baseball. Those cats are nothing alike in terms of performance, in terms of swag, and in terms of how they interact with teammates and stuff.
When it was time for baseball, you got Deion. I couldn't be prime. The game didn't call for that.
And that's because baseball was much more of a Deion sport, and he was required because of the baseball protocols and how you act in baseball. He was just a different kind of cat. And in football, it was about showmanship so I can go get paid in addition to my performance. Because people are like, well, you know, is he in it for his own shine? You know, why does he do it? But, you know, what's the ulterior motive? What's he trying to prove?
Right.
And I'm trying to tell you, man, this dude had a mansion. I mean, it's really bigger than a mansion. It's more like a palace. He had a palace.
An estate.
It's bigger than an estate. It was like a palace for real. Every day. For years, man, like 2, 3, 4, 5 years, he would drive from his palatial palace in Prosper, Texas, to my neck of the woods. So about an hour drive one way to go work with kids at his football and baseball camps. And the kids were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. That dude was there every day, all day, because he loves kids. He loves kids. Because when he was a kid, a coach showed him a world that he didn't know existed, where, you know, multi-level houses, swimming pools in backyards, manicured lawns. He never knew that thing existed. Once he knew it existed, he decided to do whatever he could to go get it. So what he tries to do is show other kids who may or may not be aware of it that there's this other world that really exists, not just something on TV, something you could touch.
So I am getting from you the notion, in contradiction of the popular conception, that Deion Sanders is doing this because he really wants to coach kids in football. Like, that is the reason why he's doing this. I just want to figure out, Jean-Jacques, what was going on at his introductory? Is it a press conference? Describe that for those who did not see it.
That was a whole lot of pomp and circumstance, man. But, you know, the whole HBCU experience is different.
Looking at the video right now, because I just wanted to rewatch it for a second, he's walking out of a big old Cadillac with a big Cadillac of Jackson sign emblazoned on the driver's side door. And he walks out like he is, in fact, like royalty.
Our 21st head football coach, the legendary Deion Coach Prime Sanders.
These are tears that you don't understand the prayers that has been made. These are tears that has accompanied me through this journey. These are tears of satisfaction, Mr. President. These are tears of joy.
Like, he didn't set that up. You know, Jackson State did that thing, and he was tripping while it was going on. So, but it was a whole lot, the Sonic Boom, which is their band, which is one of the best.
All of this seems to foreshadow, both in the advertising, the blending therein, and in the pomp and aforementioned circumstance, it kind of foreshadows how exactly this dude in particular is going to be a very different experience for a school like Jackson State.
Well, here's what you got to understand, man. Deion's a very intelligent dude. Deion is all about marketing. So if you're at an HBCU, how are you going to create the money to help separate your program from other programs? Mm. You do it with marketing. You do it with relationships. And so what's he going to leverage? He's going to leverage all his relationships to give his team and his school an advantage and get them into conversations that they wouldn't otherwise get. Why? So that he can enhance his program, so he can get the best players he can attract, and so that he can win. It's all part of the package.
But I believe this is going to be a marriage made in heaven. And I cannot wait to get started. Do you believe? I'm going to ask you one last time. Do you believe?
Well, you also leverage the media, and now I feel very self-conscious. But I want you to explain to me, Jean-Jacques, just Jackson State specifically, the university, just the basics. Where is it? What's it like? What's the football legacy there?
Jackson State, it's got the largest HBCU alumni base. They certainly have the largest crowds at their games, 33,000, Jackson, Mississippi. It's a city that ain't got a lot going for it right now, man. Tough times for a lot of people there. When it comes to HBCU football and football in general, obviously Walter Payton went there. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows him. You know, they got four Hall of Famers in their legacy. And up until 7-8 years ago, they were one of the teams you had to beat if you were going to win the SWAC.
Right.
They've fallen on hard times lately. They entered this season, I believe, 23-44 in their last seven seasons. Why? I can tell you why. Because they had five head coaches in 7 years, and they had, I think, four athletic directors in 8 years.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That ain't no winning formula.
So Dion, he also has two of his sons playing at Jackson State, right? We have Shador, a freshman quarterback, and Shiloh, a sophomore safety. Just the family affair aspect of all of this, Jean-Jacques, how does that stuff factor into what's going on?
It was an opportunity for him to coach his sons, because his son Shador was a really good quarterback in high school around here in Dallas, who he thinks can play in the NFL. Now, I don't know that, and I don't think any of us will know that until he starts to play. And then Shiloh was a safety who started some at South Carolina last year. So those are his sons. But I think it's important to point out, man, that, you know, Dion came from a single-parent household. He's also trying to be that father that he never had. What Dion would tell you is important to him to spend as much time with his sons as he can, you know, as they're going through this part of life.
All right, coming up, what it will take for Dion Sanders to find success at Jackson State.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Jean-Jacques, the Tigers' final game of the season, which had been scheduled for Saturday, it got canceled due to COVID, which means that Jackson State, which had started off 3-0, they end the year technically at 4-3 after a 3-game skid to end the season and then a forfeit that they benefited from. So, what did you see in the end from Dion and his team this season?
Well, look at the season. Okay, they're supposed to blow out Edward Waters. That's like playing a 1AA. I mean, it's a little bitty school, NAIA school. They're supposed to beat them. Grambling was a huge win for them because Grambling was supposed to be one of the best teams in their division in the SWAC, Southwestern Athletic Conference. All right. And then they played Mississippi Valley State, which is trash. Okay. So they're 3-0, but okay. But if you look back at it now, Mississippi Valley State hadn't won a game. Grambling, I don't think, has won a game. So there are 3 wins over, you know, 2 garbage teams this year in a NAIA school. When they've played the better teams in the SWAC, they've gotten beaten. Alabama and A&M drilled them a couple weeks ago. Southern beat them up pretty bad.
Yep.
when they went 3-0, the city, because why? They got this football tradition and legacy. They got caught up in the swell of, we're 3-0, we back. But this is the same team that went 4-7 last year, or 4-8, whatever they did, and was one of the worst offenses in the Southwestern Athletic Conference. And they didn't add anybody because what? Deion's got the number one recruiting class coming in, and the transfer portal is bloated. But those cats ain't playing right now for the most part. I think you got expectations. And that's why the fall is going to be so interesting, man, because the fall, he'll have more of his guys. And, you know, and we'll see what he can really do, because right now, you know, they're not very good.
I also know you've been at these games in person, Jean-Jacques, covering Jackson State. What was it like to watch Deion on the sideline?
I'm going to go back further than that, man, because he was the offensive coordinator at a private school called Trinity Christian Cedar Hill. They played my son's school. I'm talking to him before the game. I'm like, yo, you know, what's up with this Jackson State thing? I think I'm going to be down there a little bit. And while we're talking, dude, he's yelling at one of his players because his socks are too short and they're not the right color. I mean, he's like yelling at him. And when he finishes, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, socks ain't right. Socks got to be right, man. Everybody got to look like a team. Your play needs to set you apart. You don't need some swaggy uniform to set you apart. I said, dog, you sound like an old fuddy-duddy coach, man. He's like old school. Prime time is old school. Everything about him as a coach is old school, which is hilarious to me. But he's also an old soul. What's his favorite thing to do? His favorite thing to do is sit on a boat and fish. That's literally his favorite thing in the world to do. Sit on a boat and fish, which is why every time he gets a palace, he builds a man-made lake if one is not there, fills it with fish, and he sits out there and he fishes for hours at a time.
Man, that is old man. I don't know if there's another way to say that. He didn't have to do any of this, right? Like, he didn't need to go and subject himself to... Right. Enforcement of uniform protocol. To do that specifically at Jackson State, what was the why now for him, do you think?
Now, this is me interpreting his moves. Number one, I think he wanted an opportunity to continue coaching his sons. Number two, I believe he wants a Power Five job. Nobody's giving you a Power Five college job just because you're Deion Sanders. But if you prove that you can recruit and that you can win and that you can do all the little bitty stuff required to run a program at a place like Jackson State, then we may give you an opportunity at the Power Five level.
I'm also curious how his players perceive him. How is he perceived by his own locker room? What's that relationship like?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I don't know that I have a good feel for it because I don't know that they'll tell me the truth right now. You know what I'm saying? Like,
explain, I'm sure, please. Yeah.
Like, I've asked some guys, like, you know, oh, we like Coach. You know, he's Deion. He helps us with this and with that. He's hard on us, but we, you know, we need that. We're gonna play. But Deion is hard. Deion is a hard. He's like every other football coach, man.
He's not a player's coach in the way that you might assume, because Deion is a player in all sorts of senses.
You want me to tell you what his assistants say? And they probably give me the best answer because I've actually known several of them. And here's the deal, man. They'll tell you one of his problems is he's too honest, you know, because that's just kind of his personality. You know, he can make a kid feel bad because it's brutally blunt, honest. Because he always said, you want me to lie to him? Here's the thing that a lot of people don't understand about him, or they don't recognize, is that Deion was carrying around a portable DVD player before people had DVD players because he was studying tape like that. He was a tremendously hard worker as a player. And so if you give something less than that 100% effort in practice, he goes nuts because he's, when I say old school, he's like, practice should be so hard that the games are easy. I was asking him, how do you convey what it's like to work to your players? And he said, I was going through the locker room and a couple of players had pulled up my highlights. It was a 93-yard interception return against the Falcons when he played for the Niners.
George has time and his pass is intercepted. They're not catching him
down the sideline.
Deion Sanders is dancing. He's looking backwards from about the 40-yard line.
Oh, is he going to do a number on the crowd here?
And he was talking to their sideline, halfway down the sideline on the return.
He is still dancing, 92-yard officially on the return on the pass intended for Ricky Sanders.
He said, so there's a group of players looking at that play, talking about it. And he said, let me tell y'all about that play. He said, y'all see the high-stepping, y'all see the talking on the sideline. That play was made because early in the week, I spent an hour on the phone with Michael Jenkins, who used to be a wide receiver for the Falcons, asking him to explain every element of their offense to me. He said, then during practice, I told the scout team, I need you to give me this look and I need you to run it this way. Okay. He said, then the game started and I said, oh, here they are in this look. I'm going to play it like this to see what they do. And he played it a certain way and they ran the route a certain way. And he said, okay. He said, so then they ran it later on in the game. He said, I was just sitting there ready for it at the snap, like, oh, here we go. And so he goes, all that play was made because I spent all that time during the week prepping for this one moment to go make that one play at winning time. And that's his mentality, man, as a player. And he's trying to get his kids to understand that as a coach.
I have no real sense of how he is around town. Like, out in Jackson, Mississippi, there's some part of me that wonders if he's just, like, helicoptering in and out because he can do that.
Let me tell you how Deion operates. Like in his town where he lives in East Texas, you can find him at the Waffle House and everywhere else. He's been like that in Jackson. You know why? Here's why. He likes home cooking. That's what he likes. He ain't really all that interested in a, you know, $150 steak from the Capitol Grill or something. But if you got some soul food for $12 a plate, oh, he'll eat that all day long. So here's what he likes to do, man. He likes to go to a few places around town and he likes to be seen. And here's why. If you get used to seeing me, what don't you do? The fifth time I come into your restaurant, what is it? Hey, coach, how you doing? You want the usual? Uh-huh. Go sit down and you can talk and hang out and nobody bothers you. Why? Because they used to seeing you. Mm. When they don't see you, oh, my God. I mean, you know, it's the whole Bigfoot thing. Let's everybody run over here and take 20,000 pitches and everything else.
How do you assess how he's feeling right now as his program is struggling? It's his first season, but also still all eyes are on him.
In his mind, there's no doubt that at some point Jackson State is going to be one of the best FCS schools in the country. They're not there right now, but he believes he can recruit at a higher level. And let me tell you what his edge is. You're looking at his edge right now. Where are 18, 19, 17-year-old, 16-year-old kids? I got one. That dude lives on Instagram.
Yep.
He lives on TikTok. Deion can talk to Instagram and talk to TikTok with a realness and an authenticity that other college coaches can't do because they ain't on it. Deion was hanging out on Instagram before he became Jackson State's coach.
There is a lot more to Deion Sanders than the Instagram account, the magazine covers, the reality shows. What I'm curious about right now, Jean-Jacques, is standard of success. What is Deion Sanders' standard of success as head coach at Jackson State?
I think it's got to be before he leaves, whether it's through his choice or their choice, he's got to make a deep playoff run. You know, where you're a championship contender, a legit contender. I think that's his own standard. And I don't think he's shy about that. He loves the challenge of trying to take a place like Jackson State somewhere they haven't been in forever. If he has success at Jackson State, then he'll get a Power 5 job somewhere. you know, I expect it to be a much different team in the fall. And I expect them to be more competitive. And if they're not, there'll be a lot of people who have questions that want to be answered about how good a coach is he? And is it more about the Deion name than the Deion sideline impact?
Jean-Jacques Taylor, your convertible awaits you. Thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
Hey, I appreciate you, bro.
Up next, we call our friend Myron Metcalf in Minneapolis, where the trial of Derek Chauvin has a long-awaited verdict.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. The last year or so in sports has been shaped by two historic and overlapping stories. The coronavirus pandemic, which is still ongoing, and the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was found guilty on two counts of murder yesterday afternoon. After cell phone video of Floyd's murder was captured on the corner of 38th Street and Chicago Avenue on Memorial Day last year, thanks to a teenage bystander named Dardanella Frazier, America saw Chauvin kneel on Floyd's neck for almost 10 minutes. Protesters and athletes and coaches all filled the streets, igniting a global reckoning around police brutality and race and justice and the Black experience that has no end in sight. But the trial of Derek Chauvin is over now. And so we called Twin Cities resident Myron Metcalf, who was covering the scene in Minneapolis yesterday, to check back in. Myron, we're talking to you a little under 2 hours since the verdict in the Derek Chauvin case was announced. Where are you right now? What's the mood like in the city?
I'm downtown. I've been doing a lot of TV for SportsCenter, and I think the mood has been nothing short of the celebration of justice. I feel like people are exhaling for the first time in almost a year. People are honking their horns. People are singing. You have people waving Black Lives Matter flags. And just collectively, you know, when I pick up my phone, there's just so many people who are saying, wow, I can't believe it. And there's a happiness that justice has been served. I don't think anyone thinks that this is it, you know, that we have somehow achieved something with this verdict. But it does feel like a step. And it's just a celebration of that step, I think, for a lot of people in the Twin Cities and beyond.
Yeah, Myron, you've been in the Twin Cities for two decades now. You've seen what the community has gone through, not just over the past year with George Floyd and his murder, but going back years now to Philando Castile and Dante Wright, more recently when we talked to you last. How significant was today's verdict given all of that?
Well, you know, with Philando, it happened and we didn't get justice, you know? So I think it's significant in the fact that a Minneapolis police officer, a former Minneapolis police officer, was found guilty on three significant charges. So I think the level of accountability, it matters a lot. And I think a lot of people I've talked to say, hey, you know what? This is hopefully a deterrent for future behavior like this. And you just didn't see it coming. I mean, I know a lot of people figured with the quick deliberation that it was going to be a guilty verdict. I don't know anyone who was certain about that. I think we were all bracing for the worst. And the place I'm at right now, you know, there are border buildings everywhere. The city of Minneapolis shut down in anticipation of a potential not guilty verdict. So there was a city, I think, anticipating the worst because we've seen the worst multiple times. But then when the outcome happened of a guilty verdict, it was just a sigh of relief. You could finally exhale and you could finally think of, man, maybe there is a brighter future. And you just haven't been able to think that when it comes to some of these police brutality issues for the last 5 years.
Yeah, we've been checking in with you on ESPN Daily, Myron, periodically since George Floyd was murdered. How have you seen the community change over just that short amount of time?
I think relationships have changed. I think friendships have changed. I think communities have changed. I mean, when George Floyd happened, you had to take a stance in this city. And where people stood mattered a lot, I think. You know, if you were someone who thought that Derek Chauvin was justified in what happened, that changed. You know, I know for me personally how our friendship might have been or our relationship might have been, because that's just not something I agreed with. And I think there were a lot of people where it was sort of a line in the sand, where the people who thought that was so horrific after watching that video wanted justice. And it just broke a lot of things up. You know, I think this has been a broken city since Memorial Day of last year when George Floyd was killed. And perhaps Tuesday's verdict is a step in allowing this whole community to heal, because I think that's what it needs.
What role does sports play in all of this, Myron? We do sports. That's our job. And we're trying to figure out how sports intersects with a story like this. What role does sports play in this ongoing struggle as we all grapple with systemic racism and police brutality and race relations and all of it?
I think sports, especially here in Minnesota, the athletes here, I think, validated the pleas for justice. It's one thing for community advocates and activists to come out and say, hey, Derek Chauvin should pay for what he did. But when you see Maya Moore say that in the Minnesota Lynx, and when you see Karl Anthony Towns and the Timberwolves and the Twins and the Vikings, and you see all of these people with these high profiles, these big profiles, come out and say the same thing, I think they really validated the pleas that have been coming from this community, from the folks who wanted to see justice in this case and from the people who wanted to see change. So I think athletes here and what they've done with their platforms, and not even just here, but around sports, but certainly in Minnesota, they become one with the people. You know, yeah, they're big time athletes making a bunch of money. But I think when you see Karl Anthony Towns at a rally, you see that, wow, he really feels this. When you see the Lynx wearing shirts, you know, demanding social justice, you see that they're one of us. And I think that to me is the role that athletes have played over the last year with George Floyd.
Myron, after a verdict like this is rendered, and it seems like there will be, at the very least, relative calm this evening and in the near future, the cameras are probably going to leave. I know you're surrounded by cameras right now. You're out in downtown where the news media is. As the cameras leave and Minneapolis and the Twin Cities are left to reckon with the aftermath of all of this, just what does this all mean to you? What do you want people to know about what's coming next?
The fire's not going to go out, you know. I mean, the cameras will leave. People will move on. But remember, there's still three other officers who have also been charged in what happened to George Floyd. You have Dante Wright and what happened to him, the young man in Brooklyn Center, and Kim Potter's legal situation unfolding here. But I think in general, the people here are really fired up and they're passionate, and they don't think that justice has been fully achieved by what happened on Tuesday. They do think it's a step, but they know there's more work ahead. So I think in Minnesota, even when the cameras leave, the work will continue and the passion will persist as well.
And Myron, before we leave you here, what does this day and this verdict mean to you personally?
My 12-year-old daughter sent me a text message that said, "He's guilty!" Exclamation point. That's what it means to me. It means that that generation finally feels as if perhaps justice has been served and maybe their future is brighter because of what happened Tuesday. So more than anything, that's just what it meant to me, that maybe there is a brighter future ahead if we somehow harness the energy and you know, work toward that.
Myron Medcalf, I always appreciate when you share your perspective with us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.